Why?
Michael.
People turn to their families all the time when they need help starting out. And if My Nana's Investment Club can help the Michael Scott Paper Company become a reality, then I'm sure that's what you would have wanted. Does want.
Well, I'm sure that you must all have very, very busy schedules, so I appreciate you meeting with us here today. What this is a business that I have worked toward my entire life. Hey, I have assembled what I believe to be the most exciting, sought-after talent in the industry today.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan, Nick, and Weiss here with you. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. And today's special guest is Arif Hassan. I don't know if you guys remember him, but we had him on actually a few years ago. He's back to help us preview Giants Vikings. Before we get into all that, we have to take care of our sponsor, Mojo. How would you like to invest in your favorite players? Well, now you can with Mojo. Mojo has over 300 NFL players listed, so you can invest in rising stars like Trevor Lawrence, who could lead the Jags to an AFC title, or a guy like Gardner Minshew, who might start a couple games for the Philadelphia Eagles. He's confirmed to be a starter this week, but, you know, Minshew mania, Nick Adams, stocks on the rise. Or established superstars like Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, or Justin Jefferson, who may or may not go off against the Giants secondary this week. Prices move with every play, every game, and every headline, and you can buy and sell instantly anytime, all year long, so the action never stops. Mojo is live in New Jersey now. Download Mojo in the Apple App Store today and start turning playmakers into moneymakers. Must be 21 or older to use Mojo and located in New Jersey to make trades. Have a gambling problem? Help is available at 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit mojo.com for more info. Fellas, how's it going?
Pretty good.
How are you?
I'm okay.
It's a great time of the year, you know.
The holidays.
It's a little bit bittersweet because it's like there's so much football on, but you know it's sort of like the final month of football.
Yeah.
College bowl games and then the regular season winding down. Only 3 weeks left in the NFL regular season. But the New York Giants have a clinching scenario this week.
They do.
How crazy is that? That's how important last week's game was. Where if they would have lost, you're talking, what, 20% chance of making the playoffs?
Yeah, something now, like low 30s maybe at the most.
Yeah, now you win and you got a clinching scenario. So the Giants can clinch a playoff berth, obviously, by beating the Minnesota Vikings, which is a tall task, not an easy task. But the other stuff, the help that the Giants need, is actually pretty easy.
Break it down.
I will break it down for you right now.
As soon as you find it.
Yes, as soon as I find it.
I read that article in The Athletic this morning while I was drinking my coffee about the different clinching scenarios. So yeah, right. There's a few.
Here's a clinching scenario. So the Giants beat the Vikings on Saturday, and then they need one of these three things to happen. Obviously, the Giants win. They need a Washington loss and a Detroit loss, or a Washington loss and a Seattle loss. That's the more likely one. Or they need a Detroit loss and a Seattle loss. So if they win, there's a good chance by, 7 o'clock Christmas Eve, right, when those 4 o'clock games end, the Giants are officially a playoff team. With that said, your guys' thoughts on this week?
On the playoff scenarios or the Giants' chances in a vacuum against the Vikings?
Everything. The game, the scenarios. Your thoughts?
I mean, I agree with you on these scenarios. I think San Francisco is just going to absolutely roll the Commanders. I don't even know who's Seattle playing.
Kansas City.
Okay, so then I think if the Giants win, that is a very, very likely clinch scenario.
I have my cigar ready.
You always have a cigar ready. That being said, I don't know if I don't know. I really don't know how to feel about the Giants in these last few games. And those mixed emotions and confused feelings really emanate from last week's Colts-Vikings game because it was, I don't really know how to describe it. It's like, you know, I don't like Kirk Cousins. Everyone knows the absolute hate that I have in my heart for the Colts. And for the Colts to just blow that historic lead, they still put up 33 points and a half. Like, Giants don't put up 33 points in a full game. So both these teams put up 30 plus and a half going up against a Giants secondary that is susceptible to big plays against star receivers, assuming that there is competent quarterback play.
Against any receivers. And
for sure, but we're also talking Justin Jefferson, TJ Hawkinson, and Adam Thielen. Like, this is one of the better groups that this team will have to face throughout the entirety of the season. It is going to be a tall task. It doesn't help that this is a road game. I mean, it actually might help because...
Yeah, given the weather.
Well, no, because honestly, like, Kirk in sub-zero weathers, like, that actually might benefit the Giants, but... on the road and it's in a tough environment to play in against an offense that you know can score in bunches against arguably the best receiver in the NFL.
I think we can take the arguably out, right?
Yeah, but like at the same time, like if Cooper Kupp was healthy, like you might be able to just numbers wise, like still like in a vacuum, you'd rather have Justin Jefferson because of his age and how quickly he ascended. But
right.
There's still some really talented guys. But I would say probably at present the best receiver in the league, but whatever. It's not going to be easy. But, you know, what are they, 4 points?
Something like that. This is
interesting. 3.5, 4. Yeah.
Vegas doesn't believe in neither of these teams, but they sort of believe in the Giants.
For good reason.
I mean, 4.5 that seems pretty comfortable for the Giants. I think with the Giants, I was looking this up. I actually went back and watched some Viking games. I did watch the Colts game start to finish. So some other games throughout the season of them through the NFL Plus app, which, by the way, terrible app. The NBA and the NFL have two of the worst apps I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it's so bad. Like, I have League Pass and the NFL Plus. Like, you have to give up an arm and a leg just to watch a game. Like, it's terrible. But anyways, I watched the Vikings and I looked up some of the numbers. Kirk Cousins is the fourth most sacked quarterback in the NFL. That's not necessarily their offensive line is bad. He's just waiting for the play to develop a lot because of he has Justin Jefferson. You give that extra second for him to get open because we know how special he is with the ball in his hands. He's also the most hit quarterback in the NFL. Takes a lot of hits. I think it was over 70, which tells you that, hey, he does hold the ball longer. And one thing that I think we've established now is that the New York Giants defensive line is a really, really good front four, and they can get to the quarterback and they can cause havoc. And you talked about the 33 points that the Colts put up. Well, the Colts also did a very good job getting to the quarterback, and they forced some errant throws from Kirk Cousins. They did have a pick six as well. So, and I think didn't they block a punt for a touchdown too? They had a couple of non-offensive touchdowns. So, like, yeah, I do think that if the Giants are going to have success in this game, obviously, stating the obvious, they're going to have to get to the quarterback. And then offensively, the Viking defense is really bad, especially against the pass. And it's sort of like the Giants passing offense is really, really bad too. So something's got to give. I mean, they're the 31st ranked passing defense in the NFL. So if the Giants are ever going to have, a respectable passing offense, it's going to be Sunday against the Vikings. They might have to because of how high powered the Viking offense is. And Kirk Cousins, which I think is playing really good football, by the way.
Oh, I am very scared of the Vikings because, again, this is an obvious mismatch here. You're talking about a team with a great athletic tight end, which the Giants haven't been able to defend tight ends. Basically, as long as I've been alive, they haven't been good at defending tight ends. A team with multiple wide receivers who are both – Adam Thielen is very good in his own right. And Dalvin Cook, who is one of probably the 5-6 best running backs in the entire league. Skill position-wise, this is going to be a tall order for the Giants to control and limit what the Vikings do. I mean, you saw last week the Giants blitzed, I think, the second least of any game they have all year because they wanted to keep everything in front of them. And if you have the front four getting heat, that's a benefit because you don't have to send those extra guys. If you can get pressure with four, you're better suited to play coverage when you can drop everybody back. That's what they're going to have to do against the Vikings too. If the front four can get heat, they'll have a chance in this game. But if the front four isn't getting home and Kirk has time to sit there, he's going to slice this defense up because they're not going to be able to play coverage 5-6 seconds at a time.
No. On top of that, it could be like an unstoppable force versus immovable object situation for the Giants on offense versus the Minnesota defense. I think Weiss, you just brought it up. Minnesota is ranked second to last in passing yards conceded per game at 278.8, second worst only to the Tennessee Titans. So I'm very curious to see what the game plan is, because the game plan, I think we all agreed on this last week, the game plan against the Commanders, yeah, they've got a scary front four, I guess. Daniel Jones wasn't asked to do much. He didn't attempt a pass over 15 yards. He only had 160 yards, zero passing touchdowns. Well, this is going to be a secondary that is susceptible to a big play that you can pass on. And I'm curious, one, what Kafka's game plan is going to be, and two, if they really trust Danny to air it out, especially on the road.
So one thing I want to point out, because I read something this morning about this. I was reading up on the Vikings, you know, doing research, getting prepared for this. They hired somebody from Vic Fangio's Denver staff to come in and run that soft zone cover two shell that everybody is kind of using to stop the big play quarterbacks. You know what Fangio kind of developed to slow down Mahomes, Herbert, etc. The Vikings give up a lot of yards on purpose. They're going to sit in that too high look, invite you to run the ball, invite you to dunk and dunk underneath in front of them, and think that their guys on the second and third levels are going to come up and make tackles. If the Giants can't complete these incremental underneath passes against this defense, I think you can say that we know the limitations of this offense to begin with, but this defense is daring you. We want you to throw the underneath stuff. We want you to pick up these small incremental plays. It's not easy to string together 10, 15 play drives. We saw the Giants do that once against Washington. If that's the entire game, it's begging for that Harrison Smith swooping over the top interception going the other way. That's going to absolutely kill them.
Could be a big game for Graham Gano.
Oh yeah. Best Giants best kicker of all time.
Facts. Greatest kicker in Giants history. Yeah, he is.
Facts.
Giants passing offense, 179 yards a game. Only teams that are worse than them are the Titans, Panthers, Falcons, and Chicago Bears. So, look, like you said, what did you say, Ethan? The irresistible force meets the immovable object.
Yeah, unstoppable force, immovable object.
I got to go back and watch WrestleMania 3 to see what Gorilla Monsoon said. I don't remember exactly. It was something like that. But, I'm with you. That's a great point, Nick, with the dink and dunk stuff. Like, that's what the Giants do. That's what they did against Washington. So if they're able to move the ball with the dink and dunk and they, you know, run the football, I mean, you know, you can then score some points. But defensively, man, I think it's – you have to get to Kirk Cousins. I mean, last week we talked about it, like getting to Heineke so he's not able to find – you know, those receivers that Washington has, like McLaurin and Dotson and those guys. But, now, I mean, with this game, I mean, I was thinking about this. Like, you look at the Vikings receivers, right? Thielen, Jefferson, obviously. But K.J. Osborne's a really good player, too. And I thought about it. I was like, if K.J. Osborne was on the Giants, would he be their wide receiver one? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's a little bit better than Darius Slayton. But it's a very tall order. And we haven't even talked about Dalvin Cook. Who, you know, yeah. We talk about the Giants running, I mean, run defense. It's one of the worst in the leagues. So Dalvin Cook, who can not only, the Vikings can run the ball, but they can also throw the ball to him out of the backfield, which means, hey, Giants linebackers.
Landon Collins, Giants linebacker.
Yeah. Speaking of Giants linebackers. No longer Tate Crowder. Yeah, I wanted to ask you guys about Tate Crowder, because I legitimately was laughing for a good minute when I saw, I think it was, what was that? It was Jeremy Fowler's thing about him re-signing with the Giants practice squad.
Yeah.
I mean, what an absolute power move by Joe Shane. Like, just an absolute, oh, you free me? All right, you're free. Oh, you're back. You know, like it is really funny to see that happen. And, you know, I was Tate Crowder, I thought, you know, I have nothing against him, but I just thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Oh, it's hysterical.
Very.
You guys irrelevant. Mr. Irrelevant.
Mr. Irrelevant, yeah. You want to do Mojo?
All right, guys, let's do a little risers and fallers, stock up, stock down, presented by Mojo. We're going to go through some NFL players whose stocks have been rising and falling over the last week and break them down, see whether or not we'd buy or sell. Okay. First up on the list is Trace McSorley. I'm going to kill myself. I, for those who follow me on Twitter, I'm just going to rant for like 30 seconds. I went 11-3 in Dynasty, first year, decided to go for it. I traded first round pick after first round pick. I traded for Mike Evans. I traded for DeAndre Hopkins. I drafted Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson. It's like, you know what? This is the first year that all my friends and I are doing Dynasty. I'm like, I'm going to be the first winner. Like, it's great. I go 11-3 in the regular season. I'm in first place. I got a first round bye. Fucking last 2 weeks, Russell Wilson gets conked in the head. He's got a concussion. Then, Kyler Murray goes down, so I run to the waiver wire with Lamar's PCL issue, and I blow all the rest of my fab on Colt McCoy because it's a super flex league, so there's no quarterbacks available. Colt McCoy gets conked in the head. Now he's out, so now I am left with, in the semifinals, starting Russell Wilson and Trace McSorley, and I am just going to kill myself. I am not buying Trace McSorley at all. He's up 37.04%. I think he stinks. I think that this is just an inflated value. Probably a lot of people rushed to buy him as soon as Colt McCoy had his concussion. As soon as Colt McCoy is back, he's back to the bench. As soon as Kyler's back next year, Trace McSorley is out of here. Or best case scenario, he's off the team entirely if they find a better backup or even a temporary starter. 37.04% is crazy. I am absolutely not buying Trace McSorley.
We will always have the meme. We will always have the Trace McSorley throw it on a dime. Like, I ain't even trying. He's wearing number 9, just a kid from Briarwood. We'll always have the memes. We'll always have the Rose Bowl he lost to Sam Darnold. We'll always have the memories, Trace McSorley. But yeah, no, I'm not touching this. That Cardinals offense doesn't work with Trace McSorley running it. It just doesn't.
No, doesn't even work with Colt McCoy running it.
It barely works with Kyler running it, which God bless Cliff Kingsbury. I can't wait to see him on TV next year while he waits to recoup and come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Cardinals are a mess. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Okay. Next up on the risers list. Yeah, Rashid Shaheed.
This is my guy. Like, last three games, two catches, 53 yards, four catches, 75 yards.
Big play
yards.
Machine.
Three for 95. He's sort of what I thought Kadarius Toney was going to be because he wears 89 too. I'm buying Rashid Shaheed stock. I think if you look at the Saints, you know, short term, he's obviously an integral part of their offense for the remainder of the season. But when you look ahead, obviously they have Chris Olave. But after that, I mean, what's going to happen with Mike Thomas? Like, is he going to be a Saint next year? I don't know. I don't think so. So, you know, who's the wide receiver two there? Well, it's going to be Rashid Shaheed. He's their big play guy. I think his numbers are going to grow. Four targets the last 2 weeks, which is both season high for him. He's starting to become more of a...
So four in the last, each of the last 2 weeks.
Right. Eight total targets the first 2 weeks, you know, just by comparison. He had 8 the last 2 weeks. He had, I think, 12 the rest earlier in the season. So, you know, his role is growing in New Orleans. I think obviously they're headed for an interesting offseason depending on what happens with their quarterback position, but whoever is their quarterback, I think Rashid Shaheed is going to have a important role. So I think this is a emerging good, you know, deep ball receiver that I think will be around this league for a couple of years. UDFA, really good player.
Yeah, great player.
Again, completely agreed with you. You see it when a guy gets hot like this and they find, okay, we got to find a way to get this guy the ball. That's what's happened here. I mean, prior to this, I mean, you're talking about an offense that's using Marquez Callaway, Juwan Johnson, who's a converted wide receiver to tight end, just looking for bodies to make plays, and Shaheed's made a couple. So they're running with what's hot, and yeah, completely agree with you guys.
Yeah. All right, let's do one more.
Let's do a couple of callers.
Well, I want to do one more riser because I like this guy a lot, and he's sort of, and now I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name. Lindsey, the running back. What's his full name from Denver? Philip Lindsey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tyler Algier. 17.42%. 17 carries, 139 yards, and a touchdown. Taking over the Falcons backfield. I like this guy a lot. I was a huge fan of him in college. I think he was undrafted. Is that right?
No, he was drafted. No, he was drafted at BYU. I don't remember what round.
Hold on. I got to look this up. It must have been like a late round pick.
Yeah, it was like a sixth or fifth round pick. Yeah, fifth round pick. Sorry.
Fifth round pick. Okay, yes. So not exactly like Philip Lindsey, who I believe was either seventh round or undrafted.
He was undrafted.
So fairly irrelevant guy who's just essentially earned his keep. He's young. I'm buying. I am absolutely buying Tyler Algier.
One thing about the Falcons, though, is Arthur Smith's really weird. He'll give a guy a ball for like three straight weeks, and then after that, it's like he's nowhere to be found. So a little bit tough for me with Falcon guys. But yeah, Algier, good player. They got some good skill players in Atlanta. They do.
They just don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, they got your boy.
Desmond Ridder stinks.
Kyle Pitts, Ethan's boy, number four overall.
Yeah, it's like, you know what? If they had taken who were the quarterbacks in that draft year?
Justin Fields.
Yeah, Mac I was going to say. Yeah, Justin Fields. I mean, I wasn't a fan of Justin Fields, but like.
You couldn't draft Mac Jones in Atlanta. But literally. Justin Fields is literally from Georgia.
Yeah.
Grew up a Falcons fan.
They tried to go get Deshaun Watson.
They did.
Redacted.
All right, Weiss, you want to run through some fallers?
Yes, absolutely. One faller, obviously, for the Giants is David Sills. I was wondering where David Sills is on Sunday. I was like, where's David Sills? Oh, he's inactive. He's fallen off the depth chart. Good story, but it seems like it's run its course with him. I wouldn't put any money into David Sills.
No.
That's a penny stock. That's a Wolf of Wall Street penny stock right there.
Yeah, it is. Kendall Hilton, remember that guy for the Broncos that played quarterback that one?
Yeah.
Hasn't been involved. It seems like he's buried behind a lot of the Bronco receivers. Russell Wilson's coming back next week, maybe, as you know, likes to spread the ball around, but I don't know. One guy that's a faller that I'm definitely eyeing is Velus Jones Jr., who was the Bears, I think, second or third round pick. Had a quiet first season, but I think I would buy Velus Jones stock. I'm a big believer in receivers that got speed. You know, mm-hmm. I think they can have those speed. Games. You cannot teach speed. No, you can't. So I do like him a lot. A couple of other – another rookie receiver, Jalen Tolbert. Just weird. Third-round pick. Cowboys, obviously, you know, have they're sort of like been desperate for a third receiver. Seems like Tolbert was supposed to be that guy, but just hasn't emerged. And he's just been getting – he got buried behind Noah Brown, had them going for Odell. T.Y. Hilton comes in. Now James Washington is in. Don't know what the future is for Jalen Tolbert. I know you don't want to judge a rookie by his first season, but
– I mean, they drafted this guy in the third round, and he was a healthy scratch the first 2 weeks of the season for a team that didn't even have Michael Gallup dressed. I mean, it's got to be preparation and practice stuff when it comes to stuff like that, because, like, he's not even dressing the first couple of weeks of the season, and they used a third-round pick on a guy.
If you're buying Jalen Tolbert stock, you're buying it because you're a believer in the Cowboys draft history and how they're able to find players like that. Other than that, nothing else he's shown. One guarantee I want to make for everyone.
Okay.
I'm buying Gardner Minshew stock. I think he goes into Dallas. I would love that.
Yeah.
He goes into Dallas and he beats the Cowboys. It's going to be a great, great night for the content guys who would love to get on the Cowboys.
It doesn't make sense to me. Like, you look around the league and how guys like Taylor Heinicke have just seized jobs and simply have job security when someone like Gardner Minshew doesn't.
Well, no, because the Eagles went out of their way to trade for a quality backup. That's the difference. Some of these teams are very content with just rolling with. Yeah, that's the thing. The Eagles
Gardner Minshew's going to have a Gardner Minshew's going to have a long career in this league. He might be the next Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Maybe.
He'd have to. The thing is, he has to stick somewhere, and he's got to get a real chance to start. When you bring in a guy like that, typically, he's only getting your in if someone's hurt. It's not. No one's really brought him in to be a competitor with a young quarterback yet. Like,
maybe next year. I don't know what his contract is, but like,
he's a free agent after this year. Maybe if they draft a quarterback. Yeah, I think he'll have a chance to start next year. He should at least.
I agree, and I think he's going to make himself some money on Saturday.
Minshew Mania.
Yes, it's a big week, man. He hasn't practiced most of the week because he was at the memorial for Coach Leach during the week. He spoke at the funeral. I don't know if you guys saw the clip or not, where he dropped an F-bomb in the middle of a eulogy, which was really funny.
I didn't see that.
Where he was talking about how much he liked I mean, everybody knows that story about how he tried to break his hand to get another year of eligibility. That dude just loves football. I would love to have that guy on my team.
Agree.
Giants Bridge.
Ooh. Okay, Ethan, talk to me.
Giants Bridge.
On that note,
AR-15.
That's stock up, stock down, presented by Mojo. Let me wrap that up before you guys start talking nonsense.
All right. Now we welcome in our guest, Arif Hassan. He covers the NFL for Pro Football Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Arif Hassan NFL. And he is also host of the Norse Code podcast. He's here to help us break down Giants Vikings. Arif, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool. All right. Let's break it down. Giants Vikings. Vikings coming off the most historic win, maybe, in recent memory, certainly the biggest comeback in NFL history against my nemesis of a team. What? let's start with that. No, I do actually want to break down last week's game really quickly, just to sort of what went wrong and then what went right, and how is it going to affect the Giants coming up in basically what is a clinch scenario for them for the playoffs.
For sure. I mean, you have to remember the Colts also gave up 33 points in the fourth quarter to the Dallas Cowboys, right? Like they're a team that is not particularly impressive on either side of the ball, comprehensively. So, I mean, that's just going to be a big part of it, right? You can't have a big comeback without a big choke. So I think that any analysis of that has to start there, but I don't want to take away from the Vikings. Obviously they did a bunch of stuff really well in the third and fourth quarter, especially I think starting midway through the third quarter, because I think the first two possessions of the third quarter were also like scoreless. So it, you know, it's kind of tough to envision the way that they would get back until then. But a lot of it is just, you know, relying on the stuff that they do pretty well. I mean, they obviously they've got Justin Jefferson. They like using him. They're able to enable KJ Osborne, who was looking really good in the offseason, but, you know, didn't get much time during the season because they were kind of hyper-focusing on what Justin Jefferson could do, which, you know, fair enough, but it makes it really difficult for a player like Osborne to break out. And then, you know, the offensive line held up really well. I mean, it's been kind of a sore point for the Vikings for the past couple of years, and this is probably the best offensive line that they've had in a long time. And, you know, that's a big part of making for the Eagle big plays, to protect long enough to make sure that that happens. And defensively, they switched up what they do. I mean, they're not a very good defense. They're, you know, 28th to 30th in a bunch of these defensive metrics, depending on which ones you want to use. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a leaky defense. But they changed kind of what they were doing, especially in the second half, to be a bit more of a man coverage defense. You take a look at what they're doing all year, and they use man coverage like the least or second least in the league. Obviously, that's not been working. And so in the second half, they use man coverage probably at a higher rate than almost any other team in week 15. So, you know, they decided, hey, we got Patrick Peterson. He's a man coverage specialist. We might as well, you know, in week 15, figure out how that works. And they started using him, and they helped shut down, you know, Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce. And they did, you know, a pretty good job. But a lot of it is Matt Ryan's not a good quarterback, right? And so, you know, like it's not as if the Colts were scoring a ton of points on offense, right? There was a pick six.
Yeah.
There was a punt block return for a touchdown. One of their drives that ended up being a scoring drive was off of a fumble recovery, right? The Dalvin Cook fumble right after his 40-yard run. There were only like one or two drives where they scored based purely on the strength of the offense. And a couple of those were like field goal drives anyway, right? And so a lot of that is just kind of uncharacteristic mistakes. So the Vikings typically have a very good special teams unit that are probably not, you know, kind of repeatable. Like I would trust to see, and I've been a huge critic of the Vikings all season, but I would trust that what we've seen in the second half of that game more represents who they are than what we saw in the first half of that game, because it was a bunch of fluky stuff. I mean, there were two scoop and scores that were taken away. There was a 51-yard punt return that was taken away.
That was an all-time bad ref performance.
Yeah, well, until later when we saw.
Yeah, true. No. Listen, I'm very harsh on the officials, but
Hall of Fame performance.
We were talking, you know how like in UFC they have fight of the night bonuses. We want to give the refs of the Giants game a bonus for official of the week.
They did a great job compared
totally
to previous
fair.
Seasons. Yeah.
You know what? You're right. The worst ref job I've ever seen was the Colts Vikings game. They overcame it. No reason to talk about any other games this week. Yeah, you're right.
That's one of the other reasons why this Colts collapse is like to me is so crazy. Forget like just the 33-0 is in itself, but the refs literally took points off the board for the Vikings, 10 Twice. Points at least, right? And the Vikings still managed to come back and win that game. Like that to me, that's not being talked about enough. Like it was a terrible officiating game that was heavily in favor of the Colts, but the Colts still managed to blow a 33-0 game. It's insane. Yeah,
absolutely crazy. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, the Vikings are like not this. I mean, yeah, obviously the Vikings are like 11-3, but they're not fundamentally a great team like that you would expect of an 11-win team. I mean, like New York fans have been hearing kind of the same thing about how the wins are unsustainable, how the underlying statistics don't, you know, tell us kind of how good these teams are. And while New York has racked up a couple of losses along the way since that discussion started and kind of given a little bit of credence to that kind of analysis, the Vikings haven't, but I still think it's true of the Vikings as well. That, you know, they're fundamentally like, they're a good-ish team, but they're not as good as an 11-3 team typically is.
No, but I think the difference there is just the talent gap between the Giants and the Vikings. Like the Vikings have a more competent quarterback, some dominant receivers, very, very good tight end, better offensive line. You know, that's the difference. Both have good coaching, maybe overperformed, but Vikings kept winning because they just have a more talented roster.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think that, you know, defensively, the Giants have a little bit more to their credit than the Vikings do, but I think that, you know, roster for roster, you probably take the Vikings.
Absolutely.
Especially once you get to the receivers, man. Yeah. I don't know if you saw
Richie James versus Justin Jefferson doesn't seem like a fair fight.
Yeah.
Can I ask you something? So after KJ Osborne is the third receiver on the Vikings, right? Who's 4 and 5?
Yeah.
Who's 4 and 5?
I guess Jalen Reagor is 4. I don't love that answer.
Jalen Reagor would be the Giants wide receiver 1. KJ
Osborne.
I would take Richie James. I would take Richie James.
Yeah. I would take Slayton over Reagor.
You don't want to experience the Richie James experience. You don't want to.
Maybe on special teams.
I still don't know, man. Jalen Reagor is a huge liability. So he caused both interceptions that Kirk Cousins threw last week.
Yes.
So there's that. But also, he has not been punished for his special teams mistakes. It's just been kind of lucky, but he's muffed a couple of punts. He's fumbled a punt. The Vikings just happen to have recovered all of them. It is Amari Rodgers type stuff. It is really worrisome from a special teams perspective. Has probably more talent, but you know, he doesn't play football all that well.
I'm going to be honest, because I haven't paid much attention to that coverage since he joined the Vikings. Like, how awkward has it been between like him and Justin Jefferson?
Oh, they're like big friends.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. It's okay. Reagor, like I'll say this about Reagor. Like, yeah, he didn't know that he should have continued the run instead of stopping the run and stuff like that. And people have gotten mad about it. But like his attitude has been tremendous about this whole thing. You know, he talked about how it was like basically divine inspiration for him to go to the Vikings and meet Justin Jefferson, and how he can use that to kind of, you know, push himself and improve himself and kind of live up to the expectations that were given by his draft. I mean, it is exactly the kind of stuff that I know I wouldn't be capable of. I'd be just kind of a better a-hole about it. But
hey, you give me a few million dollars, I can probably figure it out.
It's not like Jalen Reagor has a bunch of options. I want to ask you, you know, obviously the Vikings and the Giants both underwent, you know, organizational change this past offseason. And so far, I think both have gotten pretty positive results. It's surprising results. I mean, obviously the Giants being in the position there, and it's remarkable given their roster. But the Vikings, you know, sort of the conversation entering the season was like, okay, it's a new regime. What's the future of Kirk Cousins, right? Like, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. And I've sort of gone from being a Kirk Cousins, I'm not going to say hater, but doubter. To actually, like, Kirk Cousins is playing really good football to the point where I'm like, he's obviously not going to win MVP, but like when you talk about the MVP conversation, like you got to mention like he's an honorable mention. In my opinion, he's played really good football. I thought last week he played another really good game. So I want to get your thoughts on Kirk Cousins. Like to me, I look at him and I say, okay, like there's five or six guys that are like those elite top tier guys, you know, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, and, you know, Aaron Rodgers, give or take. But after that, you know, it's just like a bunch of people that are sort of like the same. And it's just a matter of like who has a really good supporting cast and who has a really good coaching staff. And I think when you look at Kirk Cousins, he's sort of, when you talk about those group of guys, he's sort of at the VIP table right now with like Dak Prescott and sort of the other guys in terms of, hey, like I'm not saying the Vikings can win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins, but I'm certainly not saying they can't.
Yeah, it's been kind of an interesting year for him. I mean, he leads the league in fourth quarter comebacks. Obviously, he has a fairly notable one now. But it has been kind of a difficult quarterback to break down because statistically he's having his worst season since he was like a full-time starter all the way back in Washington. It is a really curious thing to attempt to figure out, but also the biggest criticism of him, was that his statistics were always quite good, but he couldn't translate that. And he was a 500 quarterback entering the season. He was relatively low in terms of like fourth quarter comebacks. I don't think he had one in a Vikings uniform for like 3 years, which is just like very kind of revealing. But I would say that the Kirk Cousins that we saw over the past 3 weeks is kind of the ideal version of all of the things that we've seen over the past couple of years kind of put together into one quarterback. And by that, I mean, one of his biggest issues, the reason that he didn't have very many fourth quarter comebacks, the reason that, you know, he's drawn a lot of criticism for example, for his performance in the playoffs or in big games, is because he has a low situational awareness and not a high capacity to be improvisational. So he wasn't very good in 2 minute drills. He wasn't great at red zone. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't great at red zone. Not as good as kind of between the 20s. He had some struggles on third down. Those did get kind of resolved later on, but his situational awareness has always been kind of an issue, especially in those 2 minute situations. This year, his down to down performance, you know, on first and 10 or second and three or whatever, that has gone down. He has just not been as good there. He's not as accurate as he was before, but to make up for it, and maybe to more than make up for it, he has been a much better improviser. He's been better at, you know, figuring out when to scramble and run the ball. He's been very good at converting downs in those situations. Not something you would expect of like a Kirk Cousins, something you'd more expect like a Daniel Jones, right? And also he has been much, much better at situational football, better usage of the sideline, better usage of timeouts, better usage of basically the field in general, knowing what throws to take, what open passes to decline in those situations. And the hope was that you'd be able to take this guy and combine it with the guy from last year who, I mean, last year's team wasn't very good, but he actually played really well last year. You know, be able to get those first downs, second downs, and make sure that between the 20s and, you know, before we get at the final 5 minutes of a half, that he'd be consistent and efficient. And we were not getting that for most of the season. The Vikings were like eighth in three and outs, despite having a high scoring offense. They were eighth in the number of three and outs they had heading into like week 12 or something like that. It was very inconsistent. So either they would sustain a drive or they'd punt right away. If you can get the consistent, you know, down to down performance from Cousins from the last couple of years, plus this improvisational guy, the guy that has the ability to run, the guy that has a better understanding of the way that situations work, then you get a really high level quarterback. And that's what we've gotten over the past couple of weeks. I thought his game against the Jets was really gritty. It was probably one of his worst performances statistically. I don't know, but he got hit like 20 times. I think like the actual number is like 14. It was just wild. He leads the NFL in quarterback hits taken. And then, you know, week after he did really well against the Lions, just a really remarkable game in a loss. And then obviously this game against the Colts, you know, he's done really, really well. So having those three games strung together that I think that kind of demonstrates the best of what he can be puts him in that category. And I think that you're right. Once you get past the elite guys and the almost elite guys, kind of however you want to order that, you have this like mess of quarterbacks that's like really difficult to sort out in a way I don't think was true 3, 4, 5 years ago. You'd be able to more cleanly tier these guys, but now it's like, do I put Jimmy Garoppolo in there? I don't know. He's not doing a lot, but that team's doing a lot. Like it's very unusual, right? You know, you try and figure out kind of like, is Ryan Tannehill, if he's healthy, is he even in that? I don't know. And Cousins is probably near the top of that heap, but it is more of a heap at that point. But he can kind of elevate himself to kind of maybe a middle zone between elite and not elite if he maintains this particular, you know, run of efficiency he's had.
What's changed in the Vikings offense? Because they changed offensive coordinators, but because O'Connell's the play caller, but he comes from the same school as the Kubiaks do. They all come from that Shanahan tree. What's fundamentally changed in their offense this year schematically?
They kind of want Kirk to hold on to the ball a little bit more, which is, you know, one of the reasons he's taken so many hits. And that I think is actually one of the reasons it's been difficult for him to kind of be the efficient guy from down to down that he used to be, because he's not used to the timing and the progression of how this offense is going. The receivers are running a little bit longer, his drop back is a little bit deeper. And that's just on standard stuff. Play action stuff is basically the same as it always was. Like you said, it's a very similar system, but they're running play action a little bit less than he's used to. And that's something that he's actually quite good at. I don't know if you remember Jalen Ramsey roasted basically every quarterback in the league. With Kirk Cousins, he didn't, like, I was totally expecting him to just destroy. And he's like, yeah, that guy's pretty good at play action. And that was like the story in the Vikings world for like the next 3-4 weeks. I don't know why, but you know, it's all we talked about. It was a very weird situation, but he is statistically, he's one of the best quarterbacks over play action that we've seen even over the, over a couple of years. And they're doing it a little bit less and they're having him kind of try to seek deep plays and explosive plays in other ways. That has led to an enormous amount of explosive plays, but it's also led to him kind of over-focusing on Justin Jefferson, especially the first couple of weeks of the season. He would target just Jefferson in double and triple coverage. And we've seen how that can work, right? But it's probably, you don't want to build your whole offense out of it. And so we saw some really bad games against the Lions and the Eagles at the beginning of the season that really kind of hurt them a lot. 14 targets to Jefferson, 2 picks for Darius Slay, like 4 pass breakups. I don't know if Darius Slay ended up making the Pro Bowl this year. I didn't check, but if he did, that game is probably a big reason why, because his year-end statistics look phenomenal. So he had like 7 total passes defense, just that insane. And that's because the way this offense is working, they want him to hold on to that read just a little bit longer and let a receiver like Jefferson get open, which makes a lot of sense, but he hasn't balanced that out yet. And so there is an element of deeper throwing in this offense, but if Jefferson's not open, now he's kind of checking it down and he's not getting really to the second read in the way that you'd see with Matt Stafford last year, where the second read was a decently intermediate route, whether it was, you know, Robert Woods or Odell Beckham or something. So there are some changes. It is meant to be more explosive. It is now a little bit riskier, actually, as a result, but it is kind of cohering and coming together. And now you've got receivers kind of breaking free a little bit more often. You've got him seeing the field a lot better. He likes to use these sidelines a lot. He's using them a little bit more for, you know, those corner routes and over routes that Justin Jefferson loves to run. But, you know, the terminology is pretty similar. They obviously had to change it because as these trees move on and evolve, you know, their language changes a little bit. But the way you kind of look at the field, very similar. Obviously, it's all built off of the zone run stuff, very similar. So, yeah, the offense is schematically and from a terminology perspective, very similar, but because they're asking him to do something else, it was kind of difficult for him to adapt to the features of this particular offense.
I want to ask you about, before we get into the game, I want to ask you about the Giants. They had a lot of turnover, obviously, organizationally speaking. Just what are your thoughts on where they are as a franchise? And, you know, we think they're headed in the right direction, but from a neutral perspective, what are your thoughts? I mean, I think, you know, there's coming out of Dave Gettleman, it's pretty hard to downgrade from that. So yeah. I think we can agree they upgraded at GM, but just your overall thought process on where they're headed as a franchise.
Yeah, I mean, the last couple of weeks, I think despite the fact that they've racked up a couple more losses than at the beginning of the season, I think that there's some signs there to tell you that the organization, even if the wins aren't coming, the organization's headed in the right direction. We're seeing a little bit more from like Kayvon Thibodeau, which is really nice to see, kind of see him develop. I think a lot of people liked that pick. Now it's kind of, we're seeing that bear out. Seeing Daniel Bellinger emerge, that's been fantastic.
Hell yeah, baby.
Yeah, that's so cool. You know, a couple of these rookies have been kind of bearing out. I'm still waiting for Evan Neal to really establish himself. I believe that he will, right? I mean, yeah. Andrew Thomas took a second to get online. I believe Evan Neal will as well. It's just kind of like, there was so little to work with coming in that what they've been able to do, I think, has been really fantastic. Obviously, they're going to have to hit on the next couple of drafts. Obviously, they're going to have to, you know, make sure that they manage free agency really well. You'd want to see a little bit more from, you know, maybe like Azeez Ojulari, right? But, you know, for the most part, I really like the direction, like you said, that they're headed in, how they're managing themselves, I think, is a big part of it, how they're maximizing the talent that they have. I mean, it's a broken receiving core, and for the ability to be able to put together some of the passing games that Daniel Jones has been able to put together. First of all, a credit to Daniel Jones. I didn't expect him to play all this well heading into the season, but also a credit to Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka, who I think is going to get hired sooner rather than later.
Bite your tongue. we can't have that yet.
What are your thoughts on Daniel Jones?
Because I was just about to ask. Thoughts. Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Like, what would you do with him now? Given that they're on the cusp of the playoffs, like, is it?
If I was the Giants, what would I do with him?
Yeah.
Boy, that's tough. His fifth year option was declined, right?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So they don't have any. Yeah, I'd franchise him. I wouldn't offer him a long term deal.
Franchise tag is what you're saying. I am too.
Yeah, I'd franchise tag him. That's obviously, it's going to cost a ton of money, but, you know, now's the time, right, to invest that money to figure out what you have. more consistently. And I'd get maybe a third or fourth round pick at quarterback. This is kind of an interesting class there. See if you have something in that guy. And then, you know, the year after that, you know, see if you need a first round guy. I don't know. But, you know, this is I would not commit to him long term. Just because his history tells you that there's not necessarily a ton there. He's not playing out of his gourd. I mean, he's playing a lot better than he's ever played, but he's playing all right. I mean, not enough for me to rely on him to give him like a long-term deal.
Has to show you a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly.
Before you commit something long-term.
Yeah, I mean, those tools are so tantalizing too, right? So I get it. But yeah, he has to show you a little bit more.
Big game Sunday, obviously. Giants, they actually can clinch a playoff spot with the win. I don't think the Vikings are playing for a lot. They still got an outside shot for the number one seed, but at this point you're just trying to, I mean, they would prefer two rather than three, get the extra home game, but, you know, they aren't playing for like home field or you know, the division. I think they got that all locked up. What are your thoughts on this game? Because I look at this game, and I've harped on this for a while now. I think the strength of this Giant team is their defensive line. Thibodeau had a big statistical game last week, had a very good game, best game of his career, but he's been coming. There's been games where you see like he's been getting into the backfield, even against the Philadelphia Eagles. I thought he, you know, had a good game. It just didn't show because they were just dismantled. And then, you know, the return of Azeez Ojulari really turned this whole thing. I mean, the big problem with Azeez has been his injuries. I mean, but when he's on the field, he fills up the stat sheet. He gets in the backfield. And then obviously Dexter Lawrence and Leonard Williams. And a lot of that is credited to Andre Patterson, the former Vikings defensive line coach who's now with the Giants. So I think the strength is, hey, the defensive line, they have to get to the quarterback. You talked about it, Kirk Cousins. I think he's been the most hit quarterback in the NFL. Not a lot, and I don't blame the offensive line. I think a lot of it's just Kirk holding the ball a lot longer, trying to let the play develop when you got Justin Jefferson. So I think if this game is going to be won, similar to last week with Washington, it's like the Giants' defensive line has to get to the quarterback. But what are your thoughts? And offensively, obviously the Vikings struggle throwing the football, 31st in the NFL. Giants passing offense is just non-existent. So it's like, what's going to happen? Nick brought up a good point. The Vikings like to play those cover two shell, stay back, everything underneath. So if the Giants can hit those underneath passes, which is sort of what they did against Washington, they can get those long drives together. And Knuckles can take time off the clock and keep that high-powered Viking offense on the sideline. So what's your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, if I started with kind of that defensive line, I'd expect Christian Darrisaw to have a good game. He is a really high-level tackle. I think he was fifth in tackle voting this year in the Pro Bowl. And, you know, my esteem for him is such that I think that that underrates him. I think that, you know, he has been playing a really outstanding football and they've been putting him in really difficult situations, right? Because sometimes, you know, you see a tackle with like, let's say a high PFF grade and then you watch them, they're getting a lot of help, right?
Yeah.
You know, or something along those lines, or, you know, the guys that they're up against are not playing all that well, or they want to play the run. And so the pass protection is really easy. That's not really what's happening with Darrisaw. He's split out wide. You know, he's got a wider split than the rest of, you know, the offensive line, you know, something like 2 foot splits instead of 1 foot splits, just kind of crazy stuff where they ask him to get inside the pass rusher, and allows him, which allows him to beat them on speed. And he's really good at covering the inside, you know, stunt. So, you know, they force him to play with a ton of space, and he does a really good job shutting down opposing pass rushers, you know, until Cousins is holding onto the ball. You know, it's 3 seconds in. Now it's kind of tough for anybody to win. Brian O'Neill on the other side of the offensive line is playing really, really well. He's, you know, a high level right tackle. I think that if you'd asked me 3 years ago, I'd say he's on the path to being a top five right tackle. He's dropped off a little bit, but he's a very, very good right tackle. So that's kind of where the strength of the Vikings defensive line is. I'm really worried about our offensive line. I'm really worried about, you know, Dexter Lawrence and, you know, just seeing a lot of these, you know, bigger interior guys play well against the Vikings, like Christian Wilkins, for example, you know, to choose like a Dexter Lawrence teammate from the past, you know, have done really well going up against that interior, in part because, you know, Garrett Bradbury was playing fairly poorly. And then on top of that, he's not even going to be in the game. Austin Schlottman is. Bradbury had a back injury. He aggravated it a little bit with a car accident. Everything else is fine with a car accident. No one got hurt. He just re-aggravated his back, which I think is more than understandable. But so Austin Schlottman's going to be in, and he's been struggling a lot. Ed Ingram has been struggling a lot as a rookie at right guard. Ezra Cleveland's okay, but, you know, he's a kind of an average guard, and he's next to two guys that are playing really poorly. And so that interior gets, you know, hurt a lot. And offense or defenses are doing a better job targeting, you know, that defensive interior, especially Ed Ingram, knowing that, you know, his footwork is pretty poor, knowing that they can blow him up, even though he's kind of a strength guy, they can blow him up in the bull rush because of that footwork. They know that they can get around him if they split Brown O'Neal out, just like they split Christian Darrisaw out. They know that they can treat Ed Ingram like a tackle, which is going to make it even worse for him. So a lot of interior pressure is coming up there, but overall the performance of the offensive line is better than it has been in a long time. I would just worry, just, you know, the Jets had a really great pass rush. Turns out they hit Cousins, you know, 15 times. Right. So I think that that's going to continue. I think it's going to get hit a lot. His sack rate is okay. He's getting rid of the ball when that happens, but getting hit when you throw the ball is still a bad thing. It still impacts, you know, where the ball goes. And, you know, no quarterback is good under pressure, but, you know, Cousins has a particular reputation for being poor under pressure. And so that's kind of the biggest concern. You know, you take a look at, I don't know if Adoree Jackson's going to play, but you take a look at that.
He was actually just ruled out.
He was just ruled out. Okay. Yep. Well, that's really bad news because I kind of liked how he was actually playing this year.
He's been very, very good before the broken hand.
Yeah, I was actually, you know, I watched back and I was stunned at how good he was playing because I didn't think he had much of a future left in the NFL.
Sorry, not the broken hand. I'm confusing him with the other Giants defensive back, Xavier McKinney.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that the Vikings will find a way to get in some like 300 passing yards going against that secondary. But along the way, Cousins is going to take his lumps.
Am I starting Adam Thielen this week in fantasy?
Is it a touchdown week?
It's always the question, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's if you got touchdown heavy scoring, I'd start Adam, but I don't know. It's been tough for Adam to get, you know, consistent yardage. It's been not, I would say he's getting open, right? I'd say when the ball goes to him, he catches it. But I mean, Cousins
is just the focus is on JJ. Yeah.
Yeah. In the red zone, you'll see some Thielen looks. And so that's kind of why, because he's kind of a red zone guy. But despite being like 6'1", he's a great red zone guy. Yeah, I mean, it's been tough for him. I would expect, you know, Justin Jefferson's probably going to get 100 plus yards. You're probably going to see Justin Jefferson's probably going to get 100 yards, and you're probably going to see, you know, maybe another 50 on top of that. You're probably going to see a bevy of other receivers get up 60, 70 yards. Somebody like TJ Hawkinson, somebody like Adam Thielen, somebody like KJ Osborne, you know, maybe Dalvin Cook. He had 95 receiving yards last game. Those are all options, but you can never predict kind of who it's going to be to get there. I mean, that's kind of, you know, where I think the Vikings are offensively. They're driven by that passing game, but they do want to run the ball a fair amount. Kevin O'Connell is a pass heavy guy. So you're always going to end up with more passes, but you know, they do want to use Dalvin Cook. They want to set up play action and stuff like that. And we'll probably see some of that, but I don't expect that to be remarkably successful given that defensive line.
Is Justin Jefferson human? No. This is a very straightforward question. Yes, that's the consensus I've had from the football people I've talked to, because we've never really seen anybody who moves like that.
Yeah, it is very strange. If you kind of list his strengths and weaknesses as low as they are, I guess, if you list his strengths and weaknesses on like a piece of paper, they actually look very similar to the receiver they traded away, Stephon Diggs. I mean, just the way that they win and lose and how they play are very similar, but they don't look like the same player when they're on the, like, Stephon Diggs, when he breaks open on a route, it's very explosive, very obvious. It's very fun to watch. Makes for amazing highlights. And he's a top, you know, three, top five receiver. So you're fine, right? Justin Jefferson, when he gets open, it's like you kind of have to figure out how it happened, what happened here, what's going on. It's a fluidity that is kind of hard to encapsulate. Like you watch, for example, you know, the other New York team, Sauce Gardner, play cornerback. His fluidity is like, you know, it's like a snake, right? It's incredible. It's very easy to kind of figure like, oh, he just moves really well. He's, you know, like a well-oiled machine, right? For Jefferson, it's just, yeah, he's here and now he's here. I'm not really sure kind of what the in-between process there was. He's not playing explosive, but he's not playing with the kind of liquidity that you expect from some of these other really interesting, you know, receivers that move in dynamic ways. But he gets open, he knows kind of where the leverage of the defensive back is going to be, where it's supposed to be. He knows how to push them in that direction in a bunch of different ways. Obviously he's a good route runner from a technical perspective, but the movement is kind of what makes it kind of weird. And then on top of that, he doesn't look like a bulked up guy. Like he doesn't look like an AJ Brown or a DK Metcalf, but he runs through people in ways that just don't seem possible. Like, I've seen hard runners, like Adam Thielen's kind of a hard runner. Percy Harvin is, like, to me, the quintessential hard running receiver. You know, Stephon Diggs, you know, runs through contact pretty well, but Jefferson does it in a way where, you know, he's a hard runner, you know, he gets yards after contact. But you still only expect him to get like 2 yards, meaning this linebacker, and somehow he ends up with like 5 other yards on top of it. And you're not, again, sure how he does it or where that wiry strength comes from, but obviously he's really strong for his size. He's got incredible ball tracking capability. He's fantastic at the catch point. And it's really just kind of his knowledge of kind of where the seams and zones are, his knowledge of how cornerbacks want to play man coverage in their particular technique, his knowledge of how to push them in one way or the other with his shoulders, with his hips, with his eyes, and his ability to kind of, you know, make the catch when the catch needs to be made. So not, you know, flashing his hands too early, understanding kind of where the space is going to be in order to get that catch, you know, before the ball arrives, that kind of stuff. So his spatial awareness is probably his biggest asset, but it is difficult to pin down kind of the one thing that makes him good, because he's great at a lot of things. Like, he's not as fast as Deebo Samuel. He's not as, I would say, as precise a route runner as someone like Keenan Allen, or even on his own team, Adam Thielen. And he doesn't have, you know, the same strength as you'd expect, you know, from like an AJ Brown or anything like that, but he is a top 4 or 5 or 6 guy in all of those areas anyway. And it just kind of combined, and it's weird. Not like a jack of all trades, you know, his trump card might be his contested catches, but it is just kind of a very unusual receiver to try and figure out why he's winning, but he just wins. So, I mean, you kind of take it.
All right. Well, let's get some game predictions before we wrap up here. Arif, we thank you for your time. Give us your game prediction.
Oh, man. So I think that it's going to be tough for the Giants to score a ton. So the only way that they'll be able to kind of keep things in check is with that defensive line. And I don't know if they'll do that. So I'm going to predict a higher scoring game for the Vikings, probably, I don't know, 31. And for the Giants, they'll probably backdoor in some points. They'll probably get a couple points here or there, but 24. And I think for that means the Vikings cover in that situation. So 31-24.
High scoring game. Okay, Weiss.
Yeah, I think there is a pathway to victory for the Giants in this game. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do win, but it's tough. I mean, you just spent quite a few minutes talking about Justin Jefferson, and it's just like Justin Jefferson is – it's a special, special player we're watching. I think the Giants do get to Kirk Cousins, but listen, their secondary is not built. And it's not just Jefferson, it's Thielen, it's Hockenson, it's Cook, it's KJ Osborne. I wouldn't be surprised if Jalen Reagor gets in on the action. It's just going to be
a Jalen Reagor touchdown. I'd puke.
It's tough. Listen, the Giants secondary is really bad. They Fabian Moreau is their cornerback one. It's not going to be easy. And I think Cousins is a lot better than Taylor Heineke. So I'm going to go with the Vikings, but I think it's actually going to be a little bit low scoring. I'm going to say probably, I'll say like 21-17, 21-18, something like that. I think the Vikings win it late, just like they do all their games.
Yeah. Nick?
Yeah, I got the Vikings.
No offense.
I got the Vikings in the low 30s, like 34, 33, something in that ballpark. Giants probably backdoor in, maybe 22. Realistically, my first answer was going to be 31-17, but that's a little too close. So, well, we'll say like 34-21, something like that.
Yeah. I'm going to go 28-17.
Yeah.
Vikings. Right, if that wasn't
obvious. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. All right, well, let's wrap it up. Arif, thank you so much for your time. You can follow him on Twitter at Arif. What's your handle?
Arif Hassan NFL.
Okay, and check out the Norse Code podcast. All right, that's it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys in a week. You can follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. You know where to find us. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe and leave us a 5-star review.
And have happy holidays.
And a happy holidays.
Yep. Happy holidays. Go Giants.
Go Giants.